Scott Berguin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We're talking again to Aaron Lakoff, who's a independent journalist and activist, is currently in Haiti in Port-au-Prince. Good afternoon, Aaron.
Good afternoon, Scott, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have you again. Good to hopefully get a chance to get an update on what's happening right now. I know we're, a little over a week away from the elections, if they do indeed happen. Can you give us an update on what's happening down there in Haiti?
Sure. We are indeed moving closer and closer to the elections, which again are scheduled for February the 7th. At this point, it's safe to say that they will indeed happen. In fact, there's just been so much pressure at this point put on the election officials here in the country, the CEP, which is the provisionary body here that's organizing the elections, to have these elections. The UN is pledging extra security forces, and the UN is in fact saying now that they will be able to meet the task to provide the security that they say is needed to have these elections. It's safe to say that they'll go ahead. Some interesting things, though, in the lead-up to the election. It has been a fairly quiet last few days in Haiti. Last time we spoke, there had been a pretty intense few days with MINUSTAH killings down in Cité Soleil. And they still continue quite regularly. I mean, we get frequent reports. Some days, you know, four or five people will be killed. We were at a funeral early last week for a man from Cité Soleil. It was quite a tragic story. He had been killed by MINUSTAH just after going to get his election ID card. He was killed by them, but I mean, it's been a quiet few days, which I think is somewhat of a reprieve for people here. However, an interesting thing and quite a significant and uplifting piece of news from Haiti is that one of the more prominent grassroots political figures here and political prisoners, Father Gérard Jean-Just, was just released from prison just on Sunday, just yesterday, and was flown to Miami, where he is right now, and he is receiving treatment there for his leukemia and pneumonia that he contracted while in prison. And, of course, the story with Jean-Just is he's a priest here in Haiti. He's an older man. He's in his 60s, I believe, and but he's worked for quite a large portion of his life amongst the country's poorest. We had a chance a couple of weeks ago to visit his church in an area of Port-au-Prince called Tiplas Kazoo, where he has a feeding program for local children in the area. Actually, it was interesting because after Jean-Just was arrested in July 2005, that program was taken over by USAID, who are now running it and kind of taking the credit for it. So Jean-Just was in jail since July 2005. At first, he was put on incredibly trumped-up charges of being involved in the killing of a journalist a few years ago. These are charges he's always denied. And I mean, looking at the man and who he is, it's quite hard to believe that he wouldn't be involved in that. I mean, we're talking about a populist leader, a grassroots priest, someone who's involved in the Lavalas movement. And then also, interestingly enough, he was one of the forerunners of to be the candidate for presidency for Lavalas, except when the presidential candidacy registrations came around in September 2005. Of course, he wasn't allowed to run for president because he was in prison, and they said, no, you can't submit, and you can't submit your candidacy while you're in jail. Then, just about a week ago, those murder charges were dropped and replaced by even more ridiculous charges of possession of firearms, illegal possession of firearms. So I think it's quite clear that the Haitian state here was just trying to pin any kind of wild and ridiculous charge on the man to keep him behind bars. Again, Jean Jouve continuously denied his involvement, or denied his culpability in any of these charges, and Amnesty International had even recognized him to be a prisoner of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So he...
I'm sorry, I just wanted to ask the question. Do you know if have the charges then been dropped at this point, or did they just allow him to be taken for medical care in the U.S.?
No, what's happened is the charges are still pending, and what a representative of the Haitian Justice Department actually said is that this is a conditional release. I think in a large way they were responding to the international activist pressure that was put on them to release Jean Jouve. You know, there's a lot of pressure put on them from within Haiti, people mobilizing for his release, and then, of course, with organizations in the U.S., in Canada. This is a case that's received a lot of support, and I think it's paid off because he could have died in jail. He contracted leukemia, and he's getting treated for that right now in Miami, which I think is very positive. It's hard to say right now how long he will be in the U.S. for, but people here, we were talking to many people yesterday who were very uplifted by his release, you know, hoping that he will be back in Haiti soon and, of course, out of jail. But then we also have to hope the same for the other thousands of political prisoners who are here without charges, who weren't as lucky as Jean Jouve.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many such as... I think I mentioned last time the political folk singer Annette Solana Gust, who's been in jail since May 2004. Yvonne Neptune, who was the Prime Minister of Haiti under Aristide, has been in jail since, I believe, March 2004, almost directly after the coup happened. And right now he's on a hunger strike to demand his release. So, again, we could see... his health start to fail pretty soon. So I think it's a time when we need to, the victory for Jean Jouve is a significant one, but we need to start pushing much more for the rest of the political prisoners to be released in a timely fashion.
So is there any way of knowing an exact number? You were saying, I couldn't understand if you said 1,000 or thousands of political prisoners. Is there an idea of how many there actually are in jail and being held right now?
It's hard to get an official number because the level of injustice here in the justice system is incredible. Sometimes people are incarcerated without people even knowing. They're kind of disappeared. Their families don't know where they are. But the estimates I've heard are that in Port-au-Prince they're somewhere around 1,000, and then untold hundreds more throughout the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so have there been any changes on the election front in terms of, I know the last time we talked, there was an outcry about the, what's the word, paucity of polling stations, particularly in Cité Soleil and other poor sections. Has that changed at all?
No, and in fact, I mean, that is still going to be one of the big issues. Basically, what has changed in the last 4 weeks that I've been here, when I first arrived closer to the beginning of the month, the big scandal was that the CEP was very slow in getting handing out these biometric voter registration cards that Haitians need to bring to the polls with them. There are 3.5 million eligible voters in Haiti, and at the beginning of the month, only just over 1 million of those cards had been distributed. And we have to remember that, I mean, the elections were supposed to have been on January the 8th, so it was clear that they couldn't go ahead at that point. But at this point, the CEP is now saying that they've distributed well over 80% of these biometric cards, and they'll have the rest to go. I mean, from a procedural level, from everything we've seen, yes, things have this veneer that they're running smoothly, but I think that it's important to look between the lines a bit more to see the real injustices behind these elections that many Haitians see as being imposed on them, or many people call them selections rather than elections. One of the big important stories is that there won't be any polling stations in Cité Soleil, which is an area with upwards to 500,000 people. It's one of the most densely populated areas, if not the most densely populated area in all of Haiti, and also one of the poorest areas. And there won't be a polling station there. Now, the reason that they're citing is, again, security, that this has been one of the quote-unquote lawless zones. And what the CEP is saying is that they will not tolerate any violence around the polling stations. Although a very interesting thing to note is that, again, when you go into Cité Soleil and you talk to the residents, they want these elections to happen almost more than anyone else in the country. They're ready for these elections, and they've been wanting them for months, actually, and they had a demonstration last Tuesday, for a twofold reason. One, to denounce the UN, the MINUSTAH violence in the area, but also to push forward that message that they want elections and that they want a real democracy brought back to Haiti. So we saw hundreds of people out in the streets. It was quite a loud and festive atmosphere with drumming. People brought instruments out. There was dancing and people running through the streets of Cité Soleil holding their elections card up in the air saying, chanting, down with MINUSTAH, we want peace, we want elections, we need democracy. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a pretty serious contradiction there that we're seeing. On the one hand, the UN and the CEP are saying that the situation in Cité Soleil is too out of control to have polling stations there, but at the same time, Cité Soleil residents are saying themselves, bring on this democracy. I mean, you overthrew our president, and okay. I mean, I wouldn't say they've accepted that, but people are ready to move on, but now they want true, free, and fair elections to happen.
What's your sense of how difficult that will be, given that there are no polling stations in Cité Soleil? It seems like a very large, potentially very large problem, just with folks trying to get around and get to wherever they're supposed to vote.
Yeah, for sure. It will be an issue. What a lot of residents have often told us, one of the biggest problems in Cité Soleil is simply freedom of movement and freedom of mobility. Because when you go into Cité Soleil, all the big main roads leading into the area, particularly one road called Bois Neuf, which interestingly enough, residents of Cité Soleil have renamed that street into Dred Wilmé Boulevard, named after Dred Wilmé, one of the community leaders, one of the leaders of the armed resistance, who was summarily executed by the UN in a large raid that turned into a massacre on July the 6th, 2005, which saw dozens of people, unarmed men, women, and children killed by the UN. So Fred Wilney Boulevard has numerous MINUSTA APCs positioned at either end on constant rotation. And people say that you're really risking your life, in a sense, to be out on that road and to try to get around in Cité Soleil. So that could be an issue on election day, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Just the mere fact that people have a very hard time leaving. Certainly, but I mean, I think the situation in Port-au-Prince is important. I think it's also important to look at the situation outside of Port-au-Prince, because, we're talking about a considerable proportion of the population. For example, if we look to the countryside, where a lot of the peasantry lives, and they do live in, for a large part, in isolation without proper access to good roads. What a lot of peasants are saying is that they're going to have a very difficult time voting because many of them will have to walk 5 or 6 hours towards the nearest village to cast their ballot. And then what the CEP is actually indicating is that some of the polling stations might have to be rerouted the last minute. So what this means is that Haitian voters have already gotten a card indicating a number which corresponds to a polling station they're supposed to go vote at. So imagine if you're a peasant. First of all, it's very difficult for you to have to give up, a day's working wages to make this 5 or 6 hour trek in the morning out to the polling stations, cast your ballot, and then go back. But not only that, what a lot of them are fearing and anticipating is that they may make this 5 hour voyage, show up at a polling station, and then find out that, everything's been changed. They can't vote there anymore. And then after that, what are they supposed to do?
Right.
So these are a few of the problems that we're expecting to run into on election day. I don't know if the CEP is making it a large priority to work on these problems. A lot of poor people will have voting in Haiti because, what the analysis really has been pointing to all along is that, these aren't supposed to be elections where the poor have any kind of say or any kind of power. I mean, that was certainly the whole point of the coup in 2004, was to take a populist leader who was supported by the poor out of power and install a government that would be very much subservient to its international backers, the U.S., France, and Canada, but also the local elite here.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there, I'm assuming, is it a correct assumption to say that there are going to be a lot of international observers for this election, or is that being controlled to a certain extent?
No, there is quite a large delegation of international observers coming in. In fact, some of them have already started arriving. I believe from my own country, from Canada, there's a team of about 125 of them.
Mm.
And, it's interesting. I can't speak too much to the actual mission of doing the election observation itself, but in a way, it seems like they are legitimizing, to a certain extent, the coup d'etat that happened here 2 years ago. I mean, it's very important to remember that many Haitians never wanted these elections to happen. Many Haitians wanted Jean-Bertrand Aristide to be able to serve out his full mandate that he had. And actually, quite ironically, if Aristide had served out his 5 years, meaning he was elected in 2000, his term would have been up in 2005, we would have actually had elections before we're having these elections, but now due to the immense bumbling and all these errors of the international community, they've just been pushed back, and here we are with this democracy that's completely in tatters here.
Right. And whole lot of dead people and wounded people along the way in between the two, isn't there? I'm sorry, that's not a question, is it, Aaron? You were saying earlier that the violence obviously still continues, although it seems like it's lessened some. Let's hope that that continues, continues to lessen or disappear before the election. Although I've got to think that people are really on walking on eggshells, holding their breaths, whatever expression you want to use at this point, leading up to the election.
Yeah, actually, one thing that I should mention, just from a Canadian angle, since the last time we spoke, we had elections in Canada, and of course, people probably know we have a new Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, who is much more right-wing than the last government we had, the Paul Martin Liberal government, and Harper is due to be inaugurated quite soon, on February the 6th. Part of his election platform was that, for one, he wanted to improve Ottawa's relations with Washington to kind of cozy up more, to use that expression, to American foreign interests, and also to increase Canada's so-called peacekeeping presence throughout the world. Now, what's interesting is that the UN here is actually calling Stephen Harper on this campaign promise right now, and I just read a Ken West news story that said that it's likely that the UN might call on the new Harper government, on the Harper Canadian government, sometime within the next week to send more Canadian military personnel here to Haiti, which right now the only Canadian personnel serving, besides people working at the embassy and the election observers, are people involved in the UN police. So police officers who are not necessarily military, but this will be the first Canadian military that will be in Haiti since the coup d'etat of 2004. And that's something that I do find concerning, because we've seen how the international peacekeeping forces have been operating here. The killings have been out of control, and we could see more Canadian military here soon.
Well, an aside, I'm guessing that President George Bush may have some other ideas for where he'd like to see Canada put their military, but that's another subject for another time. I'm wondering if have you heard, has anybody heard anything recently, has Haiti heard anything recently from President Aristide?
I'm not sure. I wouldn't be able to comment on that.
I wonder if, Well, it's kind of a catch-22 they find themselves in, it seems like, that they're holding elections that are really kind of on the face illegitimate, but it's obviously the way that the majority of the Haitian people see forward. They need to go forward at this point, and holding this election is a way to do it.
Yeah, and I think, again, just to underline that most Haitians don't see these elections as the kind of be-all and end-all of restoring a democracy. There's a much deeper story here, and as I've been telling people, the elections are going to happen February 7th, but the real story is what's going to come afterwards.
Right.
Whether or not the political prisoners are going to be released, whether we will actually see the UN forces leave the country, which many people wanted, whether we will see Haitians relieved from the economic factors that tie them down, such as their international debt. These are the bigger questions that we're hoping to solve and to look towards after the election of February 7th.
Right. I think one last question, perhaps the last question. The last time we talked, the Lavalas candidate, Préval, was to your... Yeah. observation look like that he was the front runner, by a long distance. Let's just assume that at this point that everything goes smoothly and he is actually elected. That would certainly call the bluff of the current so-called interim government and the U.S. and Canada and the U.N. and so on, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think for one thing, the international community will accept if Prevost wins, and I think temporarily the elite here in Haiti will accept it as well. When I'm talking about the elite, it's always important to mention they're publicly represented by the group of 184, the so-called civil society group, who are trying to get their man, Charles Henry Baker, into power as president. But I think the important thing is to learn from Haiti's past, in a certain extent, to see what has happened in this country in the last two decades since the people have tried to elect democratically their own leaders. And they've had two coup d'etats very recently, 1991 and 2004. And if Préval, who is really the people's candidate, who has overwhelming grassroots support, if he is elected, he could serve 1, 2, 3 years, but people are predicting that won't be the end of the story, and that that obviously won't satisfy the elite interests here and the foreign policy interests of the greater powers, such as the U.S. and Canada.
Okay. Well, we'll hold a good thought, keep our fingers crossed, whatever each of us individually does to hope for the best for Haiti in this step anyway, in this election, that it comes off okay and that it comes off in the way that the Haitian people want it. And I'd really like to touch base with you right around after the election happens to get your perspective on whatever happens and where
sure.
Haiti might be going from there. Really appreciate your time. Again, I'll ask you, do you have anything you want to add at this point before we say goodbye?
No, that's about it. I hope that people do continue to follow the stories of the political prisoners here in Haiti, to keep pressuring for the charges against Jean Just to be dropped completely, because I think that's the only way that we can actualize his freedom, and to keep following independent news reporting in the country.
Okay, and give us a way to contact or get more information again. Give folks that website to get the good
sure.
independent information.
Well, there's a few. There's www.haitiaction.net. There's my own blog site with my reports, which is aaron.resist.ca. There's, for example, the San Francisco Indie Media site has a large section on Haiti. So there are various ways, even on the internet, to find good information from an alternative viewpoint.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for your good work, and have a safe trip back to Canada, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you,
Aaron. And one thing I should mention also is, I'm leaving on Wednesday, but pretty much immediately after we leave, there'll be another independent media delegation coming down from the east coast of Canada.
Uh-huh.
So if you keep in touch with me, I'll try to get you their contact info, because they'll be here around the elections, and I'm sure they'd be able to give great reports from
okay.
the ground, too.
That'd be great. I'm sure we'll all look forward to that. I certainly will look forward to that, being able to keep up on what's happening, at least on a weekly basis. Okay, so thank you very much again, Aaron, and again, have a safe trip, and hopefully the political climate back in your home country will turn out to be more welcoming than it might sound at this point.
Yeah, Yeah. We'll see.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Yep.
That was Aaron Lakoff, independent journalist and activist from Montreal, Canada. We were talking to him in Port-au-Prince, Haiti.